Committee on Education for April 3rd, 2017. Ready to go? Okay, I'm going to call to order or open up the public hearing on House Bill 3313, Representative Barnhart. And if you could introduce the bill, please.
Chair Doherty, members of the committee, House Bill 3313 allows public charter schools to give priority admission to students who reside within service boundaries of non-chartered public schools that close not more than 2 years before the charter school began to operate.
Okay, Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Phil Barnhart. I'm the state representative from House District 11, which includes one of the schools that is described in this bill. It's the Coburg Charter School. Coburg is a small city very near Eugene that for many, many years has had a community school, elementary school, K through five elementary school. The Eugene School Board, and it was a separate district in the past. I don't remember exactly when it was that the districts merged, but there came a time when it was no longer possible to operate this small school district, and it merged with the Eugene 4J School District, which of course is one of the top four or five districts in the state in terms of total enrollment. The Eugene School District operated this school as a regular elementary school with an attendance area and all of the things that go with that for many years, I think at least two decades. Again, the details get a little fuzzy for me, but it's at least that long and perhaps longer. The other witnesses can testify to it better. What happened was that the school board decided that they would, for reasons that were appropriate and reasonable to them, that they were going to close this community school and send the students to one of the schools in Eugene as their regular in their regular attendance area. The people living in Coburg decided that they wanted to maintain their community school if they could do that. And their way, the method they chose to do that was to establish a charter school and they set it up in the same school building that belonged to the Eugene 4J School District that had been used for many years in that way. The difficulty is, the problem that they've encountered is that the school has become popular, and other students from Eugene have put their names in to attend that school, and under the priority rules, even with the waivers they're able to get from the Eugene School Board, they can't have more than half of the school students from the local area, just because of the way the numbers work out. Again, the people who are here to testify can give you more details. What this bill is intended to do is to allow a few schools that fall into this very peculiar situation to take their students first from the old local attendance area that existed before the original public school was closed, and then take students from other attendance areas or following the regular rule, even perhaps outside the district, if space is available. That's essentially what this bill is intended for. And the other school that I'm aware of is Sauvie Island in Senator Johnson's district. And they're very interesting. If you've ever been there, you know this is actually an island surrounded by water with a single bridge that connects it to the mainland, mostly farm country, a small school building. And apparently, the witness who's here from that area will tell you more, is in the same boat. They would like to have the opportunity to maintain their community school first and then take students from outside in accordance with the regular rule after. And because of the way our general rules for charter schools are set up, that isn't possible. And so I'd commend the bill to your consideration.
Okay, thank you. Are there any questions for Representative Barnhart? Okay, so the whole purpose with this is we get the kids from Coburg, you get the kids who live on Sauvie Island. Those are the ones that have priority before it's opened up to the other students in the school district.
Yeah, Madam Chair, that's exactly right.
Okay, thank you. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, with that, we'll call up Leah Claypool, Darla Musin, and William Lewis. And I am familiar with Savi Island. It was my local for 10 years, so.
Okay.
I even know how to get there when the river's really, really high. Anyway, please go ahead.
Okay, I'm Darla Musin. I am the director for Savi Island Academy. Thank you for letting me come today and share with you. In 2011, we converted from a neighborhood school to a charter school. And as the representative said, that in the late 1990s, Savi Island School District had to consolidate with a school district that had a high school. And so that's how they became a part of the Scappoose School District. And then, you know how budgets are. They're always tight in education. And so in 2008, 9, 10, the school was on the list of cuts. The board never closed the school, but it was always something that was under consideration. And so the parents came together, founded the charter school, and so we converted in 2011-12 school year. And that same year, I began filling out the paperwork necessary to do a waiver through the state school board. At this time, you can have a waiver for siblings, so you can give siblings a priority, existing students, so students that are returning. And so there's a couple that are already in the law that allow you to set a priority or a preference. That's not a guarantee, so please know that we're not kicking kids out because a sibling comes or an island student or a staff person. And so I began, along with other schools similar to me, asking the State Board of Education for a geographical waiver that allowed us to give a priority to students who lived within that boundary of where that school drew from originally before it was converted. And so after many, many trips to the board and a lot of presentation and showing that, as you said, it's an island, it's very rural, it's limited in growth. We actually need students from outside the island in order to be sustainable, so we're not in any way trying to create an island within an island for our school. Our school is a place-based charter, so we use the community to grow our curriculum, and so it's kind of hard to have a community school if the kids from the community can't access it. And so the board was gave me many opportunities to share with them the situation. And so in 2012, we were one of the first to actually get a waiver approved by the state that allowed us to give a priority to students that lived on the island. And so how ours is set up is it goes siblings, staff, and then students on the island, in district and out of district students is kind of the priority list, I guess you might say. With that, we still have students who live on the island who are on the wait list. Like I said, it's not a guarantee. It simply puts them a little bit further up, a more likely chance if somebody is to leave or move or situations change, they're able to potentially have a spot at the school. What we found is that when we originally got our waiver, it didn't have an expiration, which I thought, this is great. It took several months and several trips to Salem, several days away from my building. And then the board decided that, well, we didn't really think that through and we want an expiration date on it. So they asked us to come back after our first contract negotiation, so around year four, and they again approved it for a one-year term and asked me to come back again. And so we did. And so then they decided that they would tie it to the length of your contract. And so our contract ends this year, our second contract. And so this year, it makes it kind of challenging because you're negotiating your charter contract, we're negotiating our lease, and we're trying to also approve our waiver again with the state. And so it's very challenging when you have real limited resources of staff to do all those things. And so I'm very gracious and thankful to the state board. They again have renewed it this year. But what I would tell you is it's very stressful to the parents who live on the island. It takes a lot of time and resources away from the school to continually try to keep the waiver in place. And so I thank Leah because she took the initiative to find the verbiage necessary that states that in a conversion charter situation, the existing boundaries from where that school draws from could be used as a priority. And in our waiver, I brought you a copy. I can leave it for you. But the federal law does have guidance towards this, and the federal law does allow students exactly what we're asking for. It is allowable in the federal law. And so, and you'll see by our numbers, we have 6 years worth of data. Even today, we only have 9.81% of our students that use the priority of the on-island to access the school that way. Really, a lot of our students have priority through siblings. That's the most common, and returning students, obviously. What I would say is having it in the ORS, similar to siblings, existing students, those allowances that are already in the law would be a much better use of the state school board's time, my opinion, than having to churn through these waivers year after year after year. So,
okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Liv?
I'm Leah Claypool. I was a co-founder of Coburg Community Charter School and a former board member. I can just
say ditto.
Ditto what all of the background there. I was at all the same meetings, Darla, as we went through all the same stressful situations of the change of the state board. I mean, those are appointed positions, and with those changes comes different perceptions and different experiences. And so even with the waiver process, that itself has changed in the course of when we started this. So and what is expected of the waiver. And it's just a really unstable way to express things to your community. A charter school has a large issue with transparency and communication and education of its community as to what it is. And especially in my community, and I imagine Savi Island is pretty similar, you know, there's a very traditionalist education. And so getting people to understand that you are a public school, that you are in the community, and then one family gets turned away and you've lost, you know, 3 years worth of credibility in your community, which is not what we want to have happen. Our school is also, our mission is that of community immersion. We actually bring in people from the community. We take kids out. They have service projects in the community. They job shadow with people in the community. We have a lot of partners. And in order to make that work, there has to be stability to those relationships and not be seen as, you know, something that local kids can't participate in, which is, it gets a rumor around. And I want to thank Representative Barnhart for bringing this forward for us, and I'm happy to take any questions you might have about.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate both of your work and effort on this. I would say the additive that I have.
And you need to identify yourself for
I'm
the
sorry,
record.
William Lewis, Executive Director, Coburg Community Charter School.
Thank you.
The additive I would say is that this is not, this change is in the spirit and the intent, the legislative intent of charter school law. I wanted to provide maybe a little detail. We have 100 families trying to get into 16 slots this year, and that's a significant number, and we have to turn a lot away. And I would say approximately 25 to 30% of those are Coburg families, and that's a challenge for us. We're a community-based school, and we have families that can literally throw a stone from their house to our school and can't get in, and that's something that we would like you to understand. So thank you.
Okay, thank you. I do have just one clarifying question with the bill. So, I mean, there are very few, more in Eastern Oregon as opposed to in the Valley, very few school districts when they had to merge. And in 96, that the grade schools did have to merge with a K-12 school district. But there are very few former regular public schools that have gone through this process. Is that, am I wrong, or ones that were after the building was going to be closed down and so the community took
over?
Conversion.
Yeah.
Conversion schools.
There's few conversion schools in the state. I think, I would say more so in the east than the west. But I think that because it's few, and I think it's a movement that wasn't necessarily anticipated with charter law, we kind of are in a bit of a gray area. We're not intending to plop down a brand new charter and draw a circle around it. We're looking to embrace the circle that we have and then expand beyond that. Our school will never be full with the residents of just our community. It's not going to be a problem. we're very much like Sabi Island. We need students from outside, and we welcome them. And our students are district students. We continue to serve our district almost 100%. We have very few students from outside the district. We would just, hope to be able to continue to serve the district and continue to serve our community, which was actually the reason we were given our charter by the district. It's part of our mission, and that's what we are obliged to do.
Okay, thank you. Representative Vile, we have some quick questions. We've got lots to do today.
Yes, Madam Chair, I was just going to say that while I think your observation is correct, it's not necessarily the end of the story, and schools like Groner are under essentially a constant potential threat of being closed down. So I think, and I really like this idea, so I would be very supportive of this.
Yeah, because some of the, especially in the outlying areas of school districts and older buildings.
Yes.
For our students, if they're not able to access the school, for some of them, just the island ride itself is 40 minutes. Mm-hmm. And so that's to get to the bridge. And then it's another 25 minutes to get into Scappoose.
Colbert's a little bit closer.
It's a little bit closer, but we serve people all the way to the boundary. That's so you are looking at kids with 45 to an hour bus.
Thank you. Representative Solman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I had a question. I come from a small town of Gales Creek, and I really had wanted a Gales Creek Elementary. I had testified several times in wanting to have that be a district-run charter school because they did close it to the general education purpose. And so what I was looking, I was curious when you talk about the wait list. Because we had an issue through our charter school, through Hillsborough School District. Is your wait list imposed because there's a certain cap that says this is how many students that you can have at your district? Or is the wait list because of a physical space issue?
In our case, it's both. We have a cap that's part of our charter agreement, but it's also what we can hold.
Mm-hmm. That'd be our case, too. We have in our charter contract, it's written at K-8 at 216 kids, which is 24 per grade. Our facility wouldn't. We use every nook and cranny. Don't tell. It would be challenging. We would have to go to the board and ask for them to allow us to go over that cap. Okay. But we would also have to go to the county and ask them to go over the cap.
Thank you, Representative Parrish.
Thanks. Just real quickly, so just this is prospectively, so if you have kids who are outside of your districts right now or outside of this neighborhood circle, they're still going to be there. Their siblings are going to still be under their current law. This is just prospectively as you have slots open.
Yes.
Right.
This would be coming into the enrollment time. Right now, we run a lottery under the waiver. Our school has a 50% priority. So if we ever get over 50% of Cobrick students, that priority disappears, which is very cumbersome way to try to run your lottery. So this would just be going forward that as slots open up, the priority groups would shift.
It really impacts kindergarten.
Yeah, kindergarten and maybe sixth grade.
Okay, any other questions? Okay, thank you very much. Richard Donovan.
Can we
have testimony?
Can we enter the
yes. our able assistant.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Richard Donovan on behalf of the Oregon School Boards Association. I know that you're pressed for time, so I'm just going to kind of get going. Thank you for allowing me to testify. Unfortunately, I'm up here in opposition to this bill today. While we kind of want to applaud the conversation and applaud the proponents of the measure for bringing it up, this concern is got a couple of different facets that I don't think have been expressed yet. One is that OSBA feels it is appropriately a decision at the state board level. What we're talking about is an exemption. Charter schools operate, and they're supposed to operate at the district level. And so that when you look at RS 328 and the kind of the first parts of the section that describe the operations of charter schools, that one of the first stanzas is charter schools are district schools and operate at the district level. And we very seldom give, I'm not aware of any statutory exemptions for any kind of residence or kind of ability of one catchment zone or school area to be preferred over another when it comes to charter school admissions. The state board has the ability to grant those waivers for situations just like this, like Coburg and Sauvie Island have been expressed, and they have done so. Those schools continue to receive exemptions and operate. Now, I understand that the proponent, that kind of the operators of those schools find those exemptions difficult, or perhaps they would like to not have to operate under them, but that those exemptions are the consideration of the state board, and the state board has other policy decisions that they weigh, things like equity, kind of the discussions that have gone on in this committee and kind of other configurations of this committee around open enrollment and transfer policy. And there are other more broad concerns that OSBA thinks are brought up by this bill, especially because if this is prospective, what could happen is a district could have real challenges when they want to open or close schools inside a district. All of a sudden, you're kind of giving a charter an ability to preference a former catchment zone within a school district, so that for the example that Representative Bow, you brought up with Groner, you know, if a school closed, then that Hillsborough district could really be threatened by a charter school, and that could enter into their, you know, there could be a priority that exists within that district that I'm sure the proponents of the measure don't intend that. I'm sure that they're good operators. But as a statewide policy, OSBA just doesn't feel like this is in the best interest of school districts. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions of Mr. Donovan? Okay, fine. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Okay, those were the only ones we had signed up for House Bill 3318. Oh, looking at the wrong sheet. So no one else has signed up, so I'm going to close the hearing on public hearing on House Bill 3313, and open up a public hearing on House Bill 3318.
Yeah.
Alethea, if you could read the.
Yeah, Chair Doherty, members of the committee, House Bill 3318 requires school districts conduct functional behavior analysis and develop behavior intervention plan for every student who has an individualized education plan or IEP, or student who places other students or staff at risk of bodily harm because of their behavior. It requires the functional behavior analysis take place within 60 calendar days of the student putting others in imminent harm. There may be a revenue impact, but there's no statement issued, and same with the fiscal impact.
Okay. Actually, we're waiting for Senator Gelser to be here, but we can also, since they're proponents, bring up Soren Metzger and Jared Mason Gear, and then we will hear from Senator Gelser when she gets here. That's how Senator gets back on you.
Yeah, I text her.
Yeah, she knows.
She's actually in this place too. Good afternoon, Chair Doherty and members of the committee. My name is Soren Metzger, and I'm here today on behalf of the Oregon School Employees Association. OSCA supports school support personnel throughout the state, including instructional and educational assistants working in special education and bus drivers. We're here today in support of House Bill 3318 with the -1 amendment. This is the most important issue that I'll be working on this legislative session. The reason is because our folks primarily working in special education and with with students who have a 504 plan don't always have the information, the training, or the supports to avoid injury in the workplace. I've provided a number of examples on OLIS. I also had a number of OSEA members here for our Legislative Education Day, so it's quite possible that you've already heard the stories from our folks. But in case you haven't heard the stories, you'll see on OLIS there's testimony from a Roseburg teacher in the developmental learning classroom. She currently has two pending SAFE claims and will likely have surgery on her thumb and wrist. It goes into a little bit more detail just in terms of what happened in the classroom. She's also sustaining other serious injury that do not allow her to do basic household chores. She plans to finish the school year, but she recently submitted her resignation because she can no longer take it. You'll also see that there's testimony about an incident that recently occurred in Beaverton, the Beaverton School District, on February 14th, 2017. There were about 7 staff people who were injured following this incident. All were required immediate medical attention by EMTs called to the site. 2 were transported by ambulance to the emergency room, and another person was transported to the emergency room by a fellow staff member. You'll see the details of that incident on OLIS as well. The stories that you see on OLIS, if you're interested in more, we have more. People are really finally comfortable talking about this issue, and they're happy to call and have conversations with you. I think that this is important for you all to know that this isn't an isolated issue that's happening in just one school or even in just one school district. This is happening all across the state. This is why we support House Bill 3318. These behaviors resulting in injuries of students and staff, we know are not the faults of students in special education. Our folks know that, and they don't blame the students. In fact, our folks love their students, and they realize that these behaviors are often just a way of communicating with folks. So we need House Bill 3318 with a dash one amendment so that all service providers are engaged in the development. This bill requires that service providers engaging with students who have an individualized education program and a 504 plan are engaged in the development of a functional behavioral assessment and a behavioral intervention plan. Now, I've talked to you all and your staff about the functional behavioral assessment, but what it is it's an assessment of the student's behavior, what specifically are triggering the behaviors of the student. And then following is the behavioral intervention plan, which is a plan to actually address those behaviors in hopes of ultimately reducing or eliminating those behaviors completely. Service providers with this bill will, if they have access to this information, will likely avoid, service providers will be allowed to provide meaningful input on the development of the functional behavioral assessment and the behavioral intervention plan, and then also to provide meaningful input on the implementation of the behavioral intervention plan. Currently, this is not happening. So these folks don't get a say when a student, has a behavior that results in injury, even though these are the folks who are working with the students directly on a daily basis. And so I would say that they know firsthand what the triggers are and of the supports that need to be addressed to address the behavior. We did introduce an amendment that you'll see also on OLIS. We incorporated feedback that we received from the Oregon Department of Education, the Oregon Education Association, and some folks from the disability rights community. The amendments clarify that a qualified person as determined by the State Board of Education are the ones who must develop the functional behavioral assessment and behavioral intervention plan. And this is based on past practice. We know that there are counselors, there are psychologists, behavioral interventionists, or behavioral specialists. Those are the folks who should be providing these, should be doing these assessments and these plans. So clarifying that in the language of the bill. Also make some technical changes, just in terms as it refers to bodily injury or risk of imminent injury. We also wanted to ensure that the needs of the students are being considered, and that, of course, the parents are involved in the process. And then finally, the amendment clarifies what supports are. When we left it open-ended, there was some concern just in terms of, you know, what people will think the actual supports are, what the supports would be. I think it's usually up to the discretion of the district. They're not going to say, oh, you need a new car to make this happen or something. So clarifies that, and then also removes duplication of work around the behavioral intervention plan.
We need to wrap it up.
Oh, sorry. We did not develop these tools. We came across these tools when we were researching IDEA. It's not a new concept. They're proven successful. I don't foresee a huge financial burden to districts. This is, I think, a simple concept that provides service provider. It includes service providers in the development, and it's a proven successful tool. Also, I would say that, in fact, it would potentially save districts money because, as you can see, we do have workers' compensation safe claims. And the costs associated with recruitment and retention, hiring new staff, like I said, I actually think it can save districts money. And then finally, on the issues of resources, you're going to hear from opponents on the bill that this is a concern that they have. And my understanding is that the weights that come along for students in special education, that funding is actually supposed to go towards providing these additional supports for students in special education. And then finally, I would say that I don't think that safety of staff and students should be a separate line item on a budget. I think that it should be incorporated into everything that happens in the school. And so I'll leave you with that. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Representative Hack, did you want to come up? And maybe, Jared, before you speak, we'll have Representative Hack speak, if that's okay with you.
Okay, thank you.
I've got no place else to be.
Chair Doherty,
we've got about 10 minutes to finish all of this.
For the record, my name is Jody Hack, and I represent House District 19. I'll be quick. I'm in the committee next door, so I need to get back too. But I just wanted to show my support of House Bill 3318. I have a staff member in my office who's my legislative assistant and has worked in education for over 30 years. And she was an instructional assistant and suffered a horrific injury from a student and broke her jaw and several other things. Anyway, so she knows firsthand, I've seen firsthand, having worked in a school district for years, not only the importance of these folks and the hard work that they do, but also just the risks that they put themselves in. I also appreciate the bill's content in allowing them to participate in the IEP process and the 504 process and the behavioral planning piece. While I understand that there are folks that actually create those plans, and I don't believe the bill is intended to overstep or overreach in that aspect, I do think it's important that the folks that actually are working with those students have the ability to be at the table and to be able to just have those open conversations and to increase dialogue about the behaviors of the students. So with that said, I'm not going to take any more of your time. I just appreciate the work that you do. I miss this committee, I have to say. And I just wanted to show my support for a minute about House Bill 3318, and I just love the work that these guys do, and they're the backbone of our districts, and we need to protect them.
So, thank you.
Thank you.
Now, any questions of Representative Hack before she has to go back to her other committee?
Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay. Jared? Mr. Mason Gear.
Chair Doherty, members of the committee, for the record, Jared Mason Gear, representing the Oregon Education Association. We represent a range of educators, including those in special ed, education support professionals, ranging from educational assistants, bus drivers, and so forth, essentially all of those education support professionals that are not represented by OSEA. Largely would echo Representative Hack and Soren's testimony. If you haven't heard stories from our members about the kinds of encounters they experience in their classrooms or that other students experience, you certainly will in the coming months or years. We're really seeing this rise as the top issue that our members are struggling with. But clearly, I think you'll hear from opponents that this really is only solved with additional resources, and additional resources is huge. Until we're able to properly fund additional behavior support professionals, additional educational assistants, bring down the caseload that each educator is working with, this is going to continue to be a problem. But the reality is that the educators that we represent are desperate for a tool, any tool that can help them better manage the students that they're working with. And so we believe that this is a way that we can further equip the educators to best serve the variety of students that they work with. And we think that this additional access and additional collaboration will serve to improve the safety for students and educators alike in our schools. And so we really urge your support. And then we'll continue to work on this issue because this is something that's going to take additional effort in special ed and then across the education population generally. It really is something that is increasingly serious and it's going to take a lot of focus in the coming months and years to address. So urge your support for House Bill 3318 with the -1 amendments. And thank you very much.
I do have a question. The paraprofessional is just a part of the IEP meeting. They are not necessarily the ones that are in charge of writing the IEP or anything like this. And so the legal aspect of the IEP is in a licensed hands versus the paras?
That's correct.
Okay, thank you. Any other quick questions?
Madam Chair, I am curious when you talked about, because I think, I mean, we've had extensive conversation about this, and when you talked about having the ability to be at the table for discussion, there that looks different for a lot of situations, right? It might not be a part of an IEP meeting with a parent because there was...
So, Chair Doherty, Representative Solman, I think that this is a really good question, and this gets back to your question, too, Chair Doherty, that, in fact, our folks may participate in the IEP meeting as long as they're invited by the district or the parent. Now, often that's discouraged because the districts don't have the resources to be able to pay these staff to be a part of that meeting. Mm-hmm. And so I would say, to answer the question, actually, no, our folks don't have that information firsthand. OAR says that our folks must have access to the IEP, and we're also finding out that that's usually not the case either.
Quick follow-up.
Yeah, because I think we talked about the way that could look differently if the districts aren't able to do the extra contract time. What would that look like as far as a? Do you have comments on that? What would that look? Or are you saying that specifically is the answer to it? Is making sure that.
I'm saying, Chair Doherty, members of the committee, I'm saying that I would absolutely like our folks to be a part of that because even if a functional behavioral assessment or behavioral intervention plan, which is part of an individualized education program, is conducted, if our folks don't have access to that information and they're not made aware of what is actually on those documents, then how there's also a part of the IEP that talks about supports for personnel, and that would absolutely include training. And my understanding is that is not happening, which is partly why I'm here today.
Okay, thank you. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd just like to mention for those who are following the hearing today that there is a lot of compelling testimony, in fact, a tremendous amount. So I just wanted to mention that to let folks know when they cannot appear before a committee that the written testimony is read and appreciated. So.
Thank you. Chair Doherty, Vice Chair Rep Wilson, we knew that we were going to be short on time, so instead of having a bunch of people, we thought we'd go ahead and just collect the written testimony.
Thank you for that. I appreciate that. Okay, any other questions? Okay, seeing none. Thank you very much. I call up Morgan Allen and Richard Donovan.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Morgan Allen here on behalf of COSA. And it's that time of session. Every session there's a bill you have to come testify on that you agree with the premise behind the bill. Our non-licensed staff have some of the toughest jobs in Oregon, in my opinion, period. They're absolutely critical to the success of our special education students. And unfortunately, our society severely undervalues the contributions they make in terms of compensation and oftentimes respect at the workplace. And it's tough to read the types of things that Representative Wilson referred to. And in my 10 years of lobbying for the department, OSBA, and ECOS, I've talked to lots of people about these. These are very difficult situations to hear about. And the problem is House Bill 3318, from our perspective, is not the real solution to the problem. The real solution to the problem is providing adequate resources to our K-12 system so we can have adequate special education staff so that we can pay them what they're worth and so that we can provide them with the training and other tools that they need to do their job. Instead, House Bill 3318 tries to solve the problem by mandating more meetings, more planning, and a whole new group of personnel needs to be part of those meetings and plans. And as you were just discussing, so we're going to have to take more people out of the classroom, out of their work, and try to figure out how to get them together than is already required under special education law. In the interest of time, I think the other thing, just a couple other things, the functional behavior assessments are meant to determine patterns of behavior and intervention and are meant to be tools to staff. We agree with all that. But instead of requiring that parents or bus drivers or other folks in the school system be part of making those plans, we think the solution is actually to provide them the training and resources they need. There's a couple other technical concerns we have in the bill. It doesn't define serious bodily injury. There's all, you know, I won't get into it, but there's all kinds of current IDEA and IEP law that cross sections with 3318 and I think creates confusing timelines and mixes up things that are already part of current law. But most concerning, again, at the end of the bill with the Dash 1 amendment, it would appear to mandate that school districts have to provide essentially whatever staff training and resources are needed to deal with the situation. And again, that's great in a world where we have QEM funding or adequate resources, but again, it's just not a practical solution. It's going to have to come from somewhere else in the school budget. Again, without a funding resource, without additional resources, we have concerns that we're just exacerbating the problem and not getting to the root of the cause, which is we don't have enough staff, they're not adequately trained, and they're not adequately compensated to attract them into special. I mean, our school districts have dozens of special ed vacancies. You guys on school boards know it's hard to find special ed people to come work in districts. And so, again, we just don't think this is a realistic, practical solution at this point. Thank you.
Thank you. Richard?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Richard Donovan, on behalf of the Oregon School Boards Association. I've indicated that I'm neutral, that OSB is neutral on the bill, which is true. This is, I don't think it's usually smart to get up in front of a committee and say that you're neither for nor against. That's kind of foolhardy. But this is one of those weird situations where there's a tension between requiring what we think is probably not a great solution that would require more meetings and more paperwork, but in a world where people are getting hurt. And I come up here to just again reinforce that tension that these are real problems, that the testimony that's listed in OLIS is about people getting hurt at work and nobody should get hurt coming to work. But right alongside that, the school districts do not have the ability to adequately address the needs of the students or the staff. And this is a resources issue. There's absolutely an issue. And school districts would do more if they could, but certainly don't know how to. And this is a thing that I hear from school districts, and it relates to recent legislative changes. As much as every student needs to be accommodated, I got a call just last week from a school board member who says, what do I do? How do I educate the children in classrooms when a classroom has to be cleared? You know, I do not know how to manage a situation where a student is out of control and he impacts every other 25 students, because this was an elementary school classroom. How do I do this? This happens twice a week. What do I owe these other kids? And we don't have a good solution. And so I would like to just call your attention that we think that this is that there should be a better, broader, better solution.
Good question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm kind of curious because I totally hear that part about resources, and I understand that given our situations consistently every year after year. I think a lot of this also comes down to communication or lack of communication, because I think that my son's a special education teacher, and I also have a friend of mine who was so frustrated in the process for her services for her own special needs child that she developed a kind of like a trifold of these are the triggers for my daughter, these are, you know, this is information, so that any time a special education teacher, an assistant had a substitute, they could hand that and say, these are, you know, this is information for you. Because so I hear both sides of this, but ultimately I don't want us to consistently come back to, well, it can't be done because we lack resources, because there are things that can be done that I feel aren't just about adding more money or must have more money, because the bottom line is people are getting hurt, students are losing their educational part of their experience, so maybe there's something that we can do to improve our lines of communication on that. That's just my thoughts.
Okay, any other questions? Yes, this is a an issue that's been going around for decades. So, and hopefully we'll be able to deal with it. Okay. No questions? Okay, thank you very much. Those are the only ones signed up for the bill, and so we will close the public hearing on 3318 and open up a public hearing on 2223.
Chair Doherty, members of the committee, House Bill 2223 requires the Oregon Department of Education and State School Nursing Consultant establish a program to develop and maintain statewide school nursing services to meet the students to nurse ratio, assist school districts in funding school nurse positions, and create school nurse sustainability plan. And it requires Department of Education Consultant to develop statewide nursing standards of practice that include outcome measures for school health transformation and academic performance. There is no revenue impact on this bill, and the fiscal impact has been issued as a fiscal impact light, and there's a subsequent referral to Joint Ways and Means.
Okay, thank you. Did you say they were out in the hall?
Yeah, it was.
When we pull them in from the hall, we will be hearing from Senator Mona Sanderson and Representative Wisnett. But they're causing trouble out in the hall, so... There they are. Speak of the devils. Welcome. Okay, we gave a summary of the bill, so if you want to continue.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Vice Chairs, committee members. My speech now. For the record, I'm Gene Wisnett, State Representative, House District 53. It's a pleasure to be back in front of this committee. I bring you a very important bill, which I and many others, including Speaker Kotek and the senator sitting next to me, have worked on for years. I believe that students cannot learn when they enter a schoolhouse if they're hungry or if they're not healthy. This bill addresses their health. The national goal for school nurses is one per 750 students. Oregon has one nurse for over 4,000 students. Oregon has OSCA employees providing nursing services. Several years ago, Representative Kotek, myself, and others tried, including the Senator, tried to address this situation. We were not able to get a task force to study the situation. The task force determined we needed more school nurses. Now let's be honest and report that some schools have school nurses and some don't. I submit that we do not have to debate how many we need or the ratio goal is acceptable or not. We just need to agree we need more school nurses. Thus, in 2015, we passed another bill to study again and address the shortage of nurses. I served on this task force with many qualified and experts on the subject. Senator Mona Sanderson and I were the only legislators. I drove over the mountains to just about every meeting in Salem or Portland. The committee received valuable information and produced a report with three main recommendations. There were more than just the three main. Award grants to school districts to assist school districts in complying with the school nursing service requirements specified in ORS 336.201. The Department of Education shall provide technical assistance to school districts and education service districts to include creating and implementing a sustainable plan for providing school nurse services and other actions. Number three, the Department of Education must provide technical assistance to assist school districts and education service districts to maximize Medicaid billing. I like three. Number one, award school districts did not prioritize school district services and penalize school districts that had prioritized school nursing services. These grants would have come out of the PK-12 state school fund before the formula is used to allocate school funding. Number two, continues to study the issue. We've studied the issue. Number three, maximizes Medicaid billing. This was something new that I learned and the committee learned. Number three is being used by some school districts and does produce additional funding. So the task force agreed that Senator Mona Sanderson would submit SB 111 with all three recommendations, and I would submit 2223 with recommendations of number three only, the Medicaid. On February the 7th, the partial group of the task force met, and we agreed to amend Senate Bill 111 with the House Bill 223 and recommend number three only. So number my bill was going to go away. This is track the numbers here. So then we're going to decide to introduce the bill in the Senate. Senator Mona Sanderson would, but with number three recommendation only. Okay, after some comments and concerns, the senator agreed to amend 211 with a pilot project to demonstrate how the Medicaid could be worked. She told me now that we have another amendment that we're going to maybe put on that one. I don't really support the pilot project. I'm still, both of our names are on both bills because we want more school nurses. But I think that we don't know yet, and that's why we're going to go to Ways and Means to see which one's going to cost what. But I think this is important, and I put some of this into you in writing. This came from the ODE report in January that stated, it's imperative that Oregon school districts access existing federal health dollars to provide care for students with complex and life-threatening chronic health conditions. Leveraging existing federal Medicaid funding is essential and critical to the provision of school nursing services in Oregon. The Oregon Department of Education has estimated that this will increase the annual federal Medicaid reimbursement to districts from the current $5.2 million for a school year, two school years, or one school year, to approximately $45 million annually for all current allowable Medicaid billing within 3 years. Let me repeat. They think that if we implement this bill, we would increase Medicaid reimbursement to Oregon from $5.2 million to over $45 million. In the past, the Oregon Nursing Association has reported to me when I was working on some other bills, with an additional $50 million, we could have a school nurse in every school. Mm-hmm. Thus, implementing this today would give the school nurses we need sooner. Thus, I request this committee pass House Bill 2223 and refer it to Ways and Means, which then can compare the financial of each bill and evaluate the outcome, see what it's going to cost and when we really could get the money and get more nurses. Madam Chair and Honorable Committee members, I anticipate I have the support of OSCA, Oregon Nurses Association supports House Bill 223. Representative Kenny Geyer, who is the chief sponsor along with the senator and I, but she could not be here, states her support of 223.
And I'm going to have you summarize, please.
Okay, the senator and our here testifying today because we're passionate about this issue, want more nurses. You have the testimony, I believe. We're also concerned about the reason we need to do this, committee people, is just any day we could have a terrible misuse of medication to a student by a non-trained or qualified people. We don't need that. Please pass the bill down to Ways and Means, and we'll evaluate both bills in the Ways and Means process. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you, Chair, and members of the committee. I'm State Senator Lori Mona Sanderson, delighted to be here. I'll be very brief. This would be a take away some of the general fund money and replace it with healthcare dollars. It would actually free up general fund monies for the school districts rather than using that to provide health care in the school system, and it just makes sense. I have amended Senate Bill 111. We both bills can be down there, but because of the budget crisis, and it will cost money to start up, we narrowed mine so that we'd have two large school districts, pilot projects, two large school districts, two medium size, and two small school districts that we will get it going, see if it works, see what the problems are, and then go statewide. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Okay, Representative Solomon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to ask real quickly, I think this is absolutely a fabulous move in the right direction and appreciate all the work done on this. And I was curious if we thought about or do we have the ability to incorporate our school-based health centers? I think is there 43 in the state or something like that to be able
well,
to provide?
School nurses, school nursing is very different from what happens in the school-based
right.
health center. I know I was a school-based health clinic nurse at Oregon City High School. I worked very closely with the school nurse. It's just two different entities almost. And yes, maybe some schools could combine, but I think that would be left up to the school. We need to get the billing system down, and that's
yes.
what these bill does.
They're fabulous. So excited I signed on.
Yeah. Okay, any other questions? I think this is one, since it is going to Ways and Means, we may work it today. And it's very interesting how these two have been working on the bill, because, Senator, you actually have duck colors on today. And, Representative, you have North Carolina tie on. I know you didn't plan it that way, but it's, as I'm sitting up here, it's very interesting.
Madam Chair.
The ducks didn't pull it off, though.
Yes.
We were lucky.
Okay, thank you so very much for your testimony. Okay, we have four other people signed up. How about Jessica Duke and Eli Sanders, and then we'll hear from Margot Lolich and Katie Thurber. And if we could keep our testimony brief, I'd appreciate it.
Good afternoon, Chair Doherty, members of the committee. My name is Eli Sanders. I'm the school health specialist here at the Oregon Department of Education. As part of my role at ODE, I was also a staff member to the last task force in 2015. I'm going to try and keep it brief. There's some of the, per your instructions, and primarily here to answer your questions. A couple quick points, if I can go without saying, is that we've had a huge increase or significant increase in school health need. Students presenting with chronic or acute health conditions that need to be served. We also have a school nurse shortage in the state, with 79 of our 197 districts reporting no school nurses or nurse services at all. In addition, to make you guys are aware, OAR 581022705 requires a specific ratio of school nursing. The overall ratio, 1 to 750, that has been mentioned, is a recommendation for general population. In addition to that, there is a requirement for districts to maintain 1 to 225 nurse to ratio to complex medically complex students. 1 to 125 for medically fragile students, and certainly for nursing dependent students, that required ratio is 1 to 1. Lastly, as part of that task force in 2015, ODE identified that school nursing does fall under our Division 22 authority as part of our rules. That's pretty much it for me. I'm happy to answer any questions now or at a later time. Thank you.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Good afternoon, Chair Doherty and members of the committee. I am Jessica Duke. I manage adolescent and school health programs for the Oregon Health Authority Public Health Division, and I'm pleased to be here today to provide a public health perspective on House Bill 2223. I will try very hard not to repeat what has already been said, and you have my written testimony for the record. By standards set both nationally and in state law, Oregon lacks the number of school nurses required to meet student health needs. And the need for school nurses in Oregon is great, as you have heard from other testimonies. School nurses are vital to the population health of school-aged youth to support students so that they can be successful at school. The work of a school nurse includes public health functions of surveillance, chronic disease prevention, emergency preparedness, and ongoing health education. Without adequate nursing services, school districts may be at increased liability trying to meet the health needs of students or having students' needs go completely unmet. The bill's directive of collaboration between Oregon Department of Education and the state school nurse consultant who sits in the Public Health Division Adolescent and School Health Section falls within the current scope of work of the state school nurse consultant as established by the legislature in 2015 with Senate Bill 698. Development of an integrated school health services model will necessitate additional support and partnership from other programs across Oregon Health Authority, including school-based health centers, school-based Medicaid, school-based mental health, and programs such as oral health, immunizations, and health promotion and chronic disease prevention, and we would be happy to collaborate with them. The programs outlined in House Bill 2223 could aid schools in meeting the student-to-school-nurse ratios set forth in Oregon law, with the ultimate goal of improving the health and academic success of students. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. I'm here for any questions.
Okay, thank you very much. Any questions? Okay, thank you. And
thank
then
you.
The last two, we have Margot Lolich and Katie Thurber, or Thurson, or, yes, Katie. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair Doherty and members of the committee. Much has been said, but I really want to bring this down to...
You need to identify yourself for the record.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm Margo Lalich, and I'm the Director of Schoolhouse Services for Multnomah Education Service District. We're the largest comprehensive school health program in the state. I was also the Vice Chair of the Task Force on School Nursing, and there was a general consensus at our very last meeting that we've had enough task force, we've had enough reports published, we've talked about it a lot, and that there's a crisis, and that it's not going to go away, and we need to do something about it. I think it's important to incorporate a little bit of data into this, so bear with me. I'll try to be brief. But because we serve 100,000 students between two counties, last year we had about 57,000 health room visits, and just in the first 4 months of this school year, we had 32,000 health room visits. We had 5,300 delegations and teachings and 7,500 in just the first 4 months of this school year. 7,700 case management visits. 82% of the nurse students who were seen by nurses last year returned to class, and that's increased to 85% this year, which is really important. We know they're more likely to be sent home when there's not a nurse in the school. The nurse to school ratio for us is about 1 to 3,500. Some of our nurses have six schools between two different counties. 85% of the districts we serve do not meet the mandated ratio as it currently exists. Throughout the school year, I receive emails or comments from nurses and staff out in the field, and I want to share some of them with you because these are the stories.
And what do they say if you could summarize them, please?
That the staffing levels barely meet the needs of the students. There are too many near misses to juggle. We're in a crisis, and we've reached a tipping point. There's no dedicated staff. Many are concerned about their nursing practice and their licensure. The demands are unrealistic, and it's a wake-up call, and we must work towards a safer school practice. When we look at hospitals, whether it's yourself or family member, there's an expectation regarding the ratio of nurses to patients in the hospital, and that shouldn't be any less for the students in our schools. Many students present as very healthy when, in fact, they have life-threatening illnesses. We have a health system and the education system, and the majority of care is being provided by school nurses, but the dots are not being connected. I think there's a parallel to the conversation about DHS workers and child safety. We do our best, reluctantly accepting that the system is what it is, while hoping that something bad doesn't happen, or a mistake is made despite good intention and good practice. I participate in these conversations and observe the recommendations being lost in a political debate. And I ask myself and all of you, where are fingers going to point when a child is harmed because something wasn't done when we had a chance? I'm, as the director of a large program, running out of pom-poms and pep talks for my own amazing and dedicated team of nurses and health assistants. So I'm asking for your support, not only to assure the health of students, but more importantly, their safety.
Okay, thank you very much. Katie?
Chair Doherty, members of the committee, Katie Tyson with the Oregon Nurses Association. Thanks for the opportunity to give me testify in support of 2223 today. ONA represents nearly 15,000 members working in nearly every setting in the healthcare field. So I would say across the board, our members really see the positive impacts of children having a robust education, and that really includes having access to health services at school. We know that healthy kids learn better, and you know, when kids are at home at sick, they don't get the full benefits of classroom education. I will be super brief. Couple of things I wanted to just highlight. The economic costs of this are real as well. One study found that for every dollar we spend on school nurses as a country, it actually saves $2.20. So while this will have some fiscal impact, it will ultimately save money in the long run. And again, just really emphasizing this Medicaid billing piece of this program. You know, right now the Oregon Health Authority found that 58% of children in Oregon are on the Oregon Health Plan, but only about 60 school districts or education service districts do Medicaid administrative claiming or direct billing. So there really is an opportunity here to leverage existing funds to help pay for these services. So with that, ONA just really urges your strong support of House Bill 2223.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Representative Springer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In your testimony, you commented that when you were listing fears of some of the school nurses, that they feared, one person said that they feared losing or compromising their nursing license.
Yes.
Can you explain what that's based on?
Because they have such a high ratio and a large population to serve, 3,500 students, they have to delegate a lot of care or teach other staff, classified staff, to provide that care to students. There's also not enough time in the day, and we have increasing numbers, for example, of students with diabetes, insulin-dependent diabetics. And so when you have one nurse, for example, who said, I have 3,600 students, and 22 of them have insulin-dependent diabetes. And every one of those students with insulin-dependent diabetes requires 12 delegations. So do the math. That's one nurse to do all of that. And there's only so much time in the day. So it can be done very quickly. You have staff turnover. You have lack of consistency. You have concerned parents. And you have newly diagnosed students. That's just one example.
Thank you.
And when a nurse delegates, they're delegating their licensure to another person.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay, thank you very much for your testimony. Very important thing. I mean, I think a lot of us remember when we used to have nurses in every building. Okay, that's all that we have signed up for. For this House bill, so I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2223. I'm actually going to open up a work session on House Bill 2223.
Chair Doherty, I move HB 223 to the floor with a due pass recommendation, with the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Okay, Representative Hernandez moves House Bill 2223 to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and that it be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there any discussion? Okay, seeing none. Matt, could you read the roll, please?
Representative Evans.
Yes.
Representative McLean.
Aye.
Representative Parrish.
Aye.
Representative Solman.
Aye.
Representative Springer.
Aye.
Representative Vial.
Aye.
Vice Chair Hernandez.
Aye.
Vice Chair Wilson.
Aye.
Chair Doherty.
Aye. Okay, with that, the motion passes, and we will close the work session on House Bill 2223 and open up a public hearing on House Bill 3263. You could read the summary.
Yeah. Chair Doherty, members of the committee, House Bill 3263 requires the State Board of Education, in consultation with the Occupational Therapy Licensing Board, to adopt bi-rule standards for the provision of occupational therapy to children who have individualized education programs, or IEPs. It allows the occupational therapists and assistants to provide services to children with IEPs and serve on the IEP team. There is no revenue impact, and there is a minimal fiscal impact statement issues, and this bill has no subsequent referrals.
Okay, thank you. We have quite a few people signed up, so I'm going to actually limit you to 2 minutes because we have three other bills that we need to get through today.
Madam Chair, I'll just stay up here to save you time.
You could do whichever you would like. So Representative McLean is going to start everything off.
Okay, I am just going to do a very short introduction so that you folks can have more time. House Bill 3263, which is K-12 occupational therapists. Those occupational therapists are in our public school systems, and they're struggling to keep up with caseloads, travel from school to school, and to deliver appropriate services to complete the accompanying administrative duties. To address this problem, some states have adopted caps on the number of students that an OT can actually work with, or had their Department of Ed or their local school district develop a standard of care with a maximum caseload recommendation. This particular bill directs the State Board of Education to adopt standards and caseload limits for both the occupational therapists and the occupational therapist assistants. These workers are all there to support all students succeeding, and you will hear from the folks that do the work what they do, why they do it, and what they need
need in the way of standards and also conditions to do their job well. So thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, we have Natalie Shade, Aaron Beavers, and Julia Damon. Then we'll hear from Sandra Rogers, Marshall Painter, and then we'll hear from Morgan.
Thank you, Chair Doherty, members of the committee, and sponsors. My name is Julia Damon, and I am an occupational therapist practicing in Evergreen School District in Washington State. I also live in Portland, Oregon, and am the chair of the Occupational Therapy Association of Oregon Legislative Committee.
And since we do all have your written testimony, if you could just summarize it,
okay,
that'd be great.
Fantastic.
We actually read it.
Oh, good. I'm so happy to testify today in favor of this bill. I experienced the issue of occupational therapies having very heavy caseloads in the Oregon School District when I worked there as an instructional assistant. But I still wanted to become an occupational therapist in the school. Oh, sorry.
It's very sensitive. Thank you, Mr. Cross.
I felt I could do the most impact working as a school occupational therapist, even though occupational therapists can work in many settings. And nationally, we, working in the school setting, receive $20,000 less annually to work in a school district versus a hospital. I actually picked my fieldwork placement in Washington over Oregon because I knew there were such issues with the caseload sizes. I now am going to stay in my job in Washington indefinitely, and all of the people who work on my motor team will do that as well. I have the opportunity not only to serve students who need direct service on a weekly basis, but I'm also available for consult, and I meet with my motor team once a month. I also meet with the elementary school team that I work at once a week, and I'm available to make really valuable decisions in terms of their placement. A lot of these children have emotional regulation issues due to trauma. And being an occupational therapist, I have a background in sensory processing and looking at the triggers of the behavior versus the behavior itself. I'm also able to create, modify, and refurbish adaptive equipment, which saves the district a lot of money. And I feel that I have to be here because I'm receiving such wonderful job conditions in Washington, and I feel really bad for my fellow practitioners in Oregon. And I actually joined the legislative committee to specifically work on this issue. So thank you very much for this hearing.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Hi, Chair Doherty and the Committee on Education. My name is Aaron Beavers. I've been an occupational therapist for 6 years. The majority of my career has been in schools, but recently I have moved out of that. I want to touch base on what Julia just said because she did a great explanation of the difference between Washington and Oregon. I started my career working in Washington, so I respect exactly what she said. In terms of the work environment and conditions in Washington. When I moved to Oregon, the difference was startling, something that I did not expect. So I just want to summarize real quickly some of the differences and why they're so important, and this bill is so important to our career and our students and families. When I worked in Washington, the average student had 120 minutes a month of occupational therapy services on their IEP. I was part of a regular staff in a school, and I was split between a maximum of two schools with a caseload of about 40 students. I was regularly there as part of the team. When I moved to Oregon, in my job interview, I was told that I would follow a consultative model. What that meant was I was split between nine schools, I would adopt a caseload of 85 students, and as I discovered and worked in this job, I realized that my car became my equipment center, my lunchroom, my office, and my storage. I spent hours a day in my car to get from destination to destination, only to spend a minimal time with each student. I was not part of a regular team because I was split between so many teams, I couldn't be there to help collaborate. I was in and out of the classroom. And most importantly, the average student that I saw in Oregon, their services were 120 minutes a year of OT on an IEP. I ask you to sit and think about that just for a second. 120 minutes a month versus 120 minutes a year. In my experience, it doesn't matter to me how experienced of a therapist you are. I question the progress and development of skills that you will make in a student with 2 hours a year working with them. And not only you are not readily available in any of these schools because you don't even have a desk. You're split, you're in your car. I tried my best to meet my family's needs, but I really struggled. I found that my job seemed a little unethical, really. And after 4 months, I said, you know, maybe it's me. I don't want to quit. I'm going to give myself one more year in this job because maybe it's my inexperience. And exactly 1 year later, I gave my 2 weeks' notice. I felt my role as the OT was not only draining, but it was not best practice. A state like Washington or other states in the country could give a great model of a service delivery that could help Oregon adopt new standards. As OTs, I promise you, we have a lot of skills that can make great progress in many areas of our students with special needs and their families. But we have to have a reasonable caseload and workload to do so. I urge you to strongly support this bill because it's very important for our students and our families to receive adequate services. Thank you.
If you want to again summarize your testimony.
Yes, of course. Good afternoon, Chair Doherty and House Committee. My name is Natalie Shad. I am currently a practicing occupational therapist in the Oregon City School District. I have more than 75 students on my caseload. I am in the process of initial evaluation for many others. I work with children who are entering kindergarten all the way up through 12th grade. And while I love my job, I sometimes question whether or not I'm part of a just system. For 30 years, research has told us that just like students in general education, students with disabilities must have access to their general education and also in order to meet their developmental goals and lead productive lives, they must have access to adequate services.
I'm going to ask you to really make it short because
sure.
We have three other people in about 4 minutes.
Okay.
For all the rest of the testimony.
You got it. My main point is that right now in my school district, students are receiving 90 minutes per year with profound disabilities. They have severe disabilities. We're at 120 minutes a year. It's just not enough time. And so today I just urge you to really think about adopting guidelines to help us ensure that our workloads are manageable and that we could meet the needs of our students throughout Oregon.
Thank you. And I do also, we can send it to the Department of Ed, but you still may not get any more minutes. And I want you guys to realize that with the kind of funding issues that we have, because the bill is to send it to the Department of Ed to come up with some standards.
Sure.
So,
Thank you, Chair Doherty. And we look forward just to have any kind of guidelines at all, because right now it's the lack of guidelines
that's
creating
the
issue. Thank
okay,
you.
Any questions? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, we have Sandra Rogers and Marshall Painter. And then Morgan.
Yes.
Okay, and again, if you want to summarize your testimony, because we do have it in writing.
Good afternoon. My name is Sandra Rogers, and I'm an occupational therapist, and I'm also a faculty member at Pacific University. Pacific University is the only school that educates occupational therapists in the state of Oregon. My job is to teach all the pediatric content, as well as to help students understand what the words best practice means. What I teach in the classroom is a stark contrast to what they see in their fieldwork placements, our students see on their fieldwork placements, and what I currently know is best practice. Therapists routinely connect with me and call me and tell me very similar stories to what Natalie and Aaron and Julia have just shared. And so that isn't an uncommon issue. It's a very common issue for some of our therapists to have caseloads over 120. I'm also privileged to be able to connect with people nationwide because of my job. And I understand that our caseloads are some of the highest in this country. What I've done is studied many of the states and their approaches to the workload and caseload issues. And I have, lots of tables. I can share with you that information and have provided just two alternatives are basically a caseload issue or establishing a caseload and establishing a establishing a workload. California does a workload. Washington does a caseload. There are lots of good examples out there. I can provide you with how some of those approaches are. And so thank you for considering the House Bill 3263, and I appreciate your attention this afternoon.
Okay, thank you very much.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair Doherty, members of the committee. My name is Michelle Painter. I am a certified occupational therapy assistant and faculty at Lynn Benton Community College's Occupational Therapy Assistant Program, which is also the only occupational therapy assistant program in Oregon. And prior to my teaching career, I was a COTA in the school setting for about 27 years. And I saw historically over time where schools were the leading place for COTAs to be employed. Over time, those positions, either through attrition or through budget cutbacks, have been eliminated, shifting the burden of serving these students to occupational therapists. And I have seen their caseloads balloon out of control. Kids are not receiving or being treated or being seen or being worked with by paraprofessionals who are not licensed, who are not skilled to deal with behavioral issues, sensory processing disorders. And certified occupational therapy assistants provide that bridge from the OT who provides the initial evaluation to be the individual who can not only provide direct service but also consult with the classroom staff so that the services that are being provided to those students are appropriate and that changes are made as the child changes, as the student changes. So I thank you for your time. Just wanted to express our appreciation of your support for House Bill 3263.
And again, I'm going to emphasize this is just a committee that's going to meet with that. There's no guarantees that there will be any staffing changes.
Understood.
It's just the idea of looking at them. So.
Yes.
But thank you so much for your testimony.
We have to start.
Any questions?
Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Allen. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Morgan Allen here on behalf of the Confederation of Oregon School Administrators in opposition to House Bill 3263. And I think I'm really glad that some of the folks that testified before me talked about Washington. Let's compare Oregon and Washington right now. The fight in the Washington legislature is how many billions of dollars are they going to add to the K-12 budget? The current K-12 budget proposed by the co-chairs in Oregon is a $600 million cut to current service levels. And so we have some concerns about the bill, and they're really twofold. The first is the bill essentially directs the state board to require the occupational therapist become part of the IEP team, which goes beyond the requirements of federal IDEA special education law and just means one more person that we're going to have to pull into the IEP team meetings. And the bill says the standards must allow that member to serve as part of the IEP team. And it says the standards must establish limits on the number of children whom the therapists see. And so I think, again, that's a good idea in theory. We'd love to have that standard. But if we start doing it for occupational therapists, then this legislature needs to seriously think about class size limitations, limiting the number of kids educational assistants do. Let's put a ratio on the number of students that school nurses could live, social workers, school psychologists. I could go down the list. And so it's difficult to present this kind of testimony, but those are the realities we're looking at. A $7.8 billion budget is the equivalent to 24 school days cut in the next school year, or 3,000 teachers. So that's what we're facing. So I know you guys have a difficult job. It brings me no joy to come up and testify against these kinds of bills. And so I'm going to stop there. Thank you.
Representative McLean.
Well, I appreciate your testimony. I found out about 15 minutes right before this meeting that you were going to testify. And I think all of us are very, very concerned about the budgets here in the state of Oregon. But I think that there's some folks that have come to us, and we made an obligation as representatives for them that we would tell you what we need, not what we can fund. And so I appreciate your comments, and certainly we're all going to make those hard budget decisions and votes. But I really appreciate the folks that came today, from nurses to occupational therapists, but to people who really care about what those kids are getting. And so as much as we have to take care of the budget, we also have to make sure that the budget has in it what's really going to help those kids. So thank you. I appreciate your comments. It was a hard thing for me to listen to. It was a hard thing for you to give. But we have to keep talking about the goals, the aspirations, the quality education model, and all of us have to figure out how to get more people to help us with resources.
Yeah. Okay, so is this considered an unfunded mandate?
I certainly would consider it an unfunded mandate.
Pardon?
Chair. Absolutely. Okay. I mean, the bill doesn't, it requires them. It requires the state board to set standards. It doesn't say they can think about it. It says they must.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions? Okay, Morty, thank you very much. Okay, that's all we have signed up today, so I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3263 and open up a public hearing on House Bill 3208. Representative Springer, speaking of unfunded mandates.
Thank you, Chair, for all your editorial comments today.
She watched a lot of sports.
Yeah, I guess she did.
If you could go through it.
Chair Doherty,
talk about the summary.
Chair Doherty, members of the committee, House Bill 3208 prevents the Oregon State Legislature from enacting legislation that changes the organizational structure of public education in the state, changes the curriculum standards of public education in the state, changes the statewide assessment system, and changes any portion of the public education system in the state of Oregon.
Hey, Representative Springer.
And thank you, Madam Chair. About how much time?
15 minutes total for the whole thing.
Okay.
And we have, we have three other people signed up on this bill.
Okay. So. Well, I need to set the stage, so I'm going to just kick off and do that. I'm Sherry Springer, State Representative from House District 17. This isn't a conversation about unfunded or funded mandates. This is a conversation that is really all about a question. I'll be very frank, my frustration peaked this year, not with any one person or any one decision, but when the speaker called me into her office and said, what kind of committees would you like? I said, told her what I'd like, and I said, and you can pull me off education. And she looked at me a little odd, and she said, why? And I said, I've been in this building 9 years. Are you going to tell me our kids are any better off now than they were 9 years ago? She didn't say yes. And again, this is not about one person, one entity, one organization, one decision. This is about us as a body looking at education in the state and how often we change it. And I think we would all argue that when we vote yes on good ideas. How many good ideas can we have, and for how long can we sustain new ideas changing every 2, maybe 3 years? So this is, we already advanced. So this is about asking a question. Let me just briefly point out this slide to you. Give you some very quick data points here. In the U.S., the teacher-to-student ratio, 1 to 16, 1 to 22 in Oregon. administrators, 1 to 294, 1 to 389. Go ahead. I just want to set the stage with that for a little bit. Now, we all know we can parse the number out and how we came across it, but we all know that our graduation rate is far too low. And if we want to figure 4-year, 5-year, whatever, if it's not 100%, it's not good enough, number one. And number two, it's nowhere near 100%. We have 94,000 chronically absent students. We have a really short year. Mm-hmm. So let me briefly show you this slide here, and I have to give kudos to our new Legislative Policy and Research Office. I think this was kind of their first foray into doing some of this work, and I got to benefit, and now I'm sharing my benefit with you. This is how many education bills have been passed each session. You'll notice that it's low and high and low and high, the short session and the long session. But let's keep in mind, sometimes that short session is 3 weeks. 9 bills, 7 bills, 6 bills in 3 weeks. Just a lot of bills. That's the only point to the slide. Go ahead, please. So, different types of bills. For a total of 254 bills, different types of bills. And let me reiterate, I'm not saying these bills are good or bad. There's no value judgment here as far as the content of the policy. It is time for us as this legislative body to step back and say, are we doing too many good things, or do we not let the good things we do have an opportunity to succeed by leaving them in place before we tweak them or eliminate them or change them? And I want to pause here and throw a couple more pieces into this. Some of the whereas statements in the bill before you, I like, maybe some I don't like so much. I encourage you not to focus on the wording of those. They were some examples. But keep in mind, we're not just talking about this legislative body. We're also talking about the Department of Education. We're talking about State Board of Education. I have actually found myself in the position with a bill debating and negotiating with State Board of Education. I'm the elected lawmaker, not them. So we need to remember that we have three entities, not saying any's better than the other, changing education based on what they think is right. I don't think anybody has an ill motive here. I really, really don't. We may disagree, but I don't think we have bad motives. I really don't. So let's go to the next one. Isn't that a full slide? I just violated PowerPoint 101 with this slide. But I know that. I'm just going to draw out a couple. Graduation requirements, and keep in mind that the data set for, or the time frame for this data set is 2007 through 16. 7 graduation requirement changes. Maybe those were good, maybe they weren't. I'm sure everybody that voted yes, including me, thought they were good.
There were 7.
So this is a key one. School personnel, 37 bills. We're talking less than 10 years, 37 bills. 34 of those were actual policy changes. And frankly, this one bothers me. This one upset me. State government. So when I first looked at that category, I didn't pick the category. I thought, what does that define? So because the LPRO is so diligent in putting their work together, they defined it for me. So keep in mind that 37 number, about 2/3 of the way down. State government, bills related to state government agencies or the organization and structure of the state's P-12 education system. Am I the only one that looks at that and thinks, wow, those are big changes? Those are big changes. And obviously the majority of people liked those changes, so we have them. So I can't think of a time where I've come and either testified on a bill or brought an issue that I didn't attempt to bring a solution. But I don't have the solution, because I'm not saying making laws are bad or good. not saying the Department of Ed should stay or not. I am, as a result of asking myself these questions several months ago, I'm thinking, what am I doing? You've noticed on here that I've talked about a lot of these bills. Are we changing things? And I know before signy die, I'm going to take some votes I absolutely hate because I'm going to say no to some good ideas. Representative Wilson came up to me, as staff did the first part, the very first week of session, said, here, I got a great education idea. I said, you sure do. And they said, will you sign on? And I said, no, I won't. And I didn't. I didn't. So I'm asking myself the question, do I need to control my appetite for change for education because I'm passionate about it and I care about it and I want to make it better? Do I need to control my appetite for change? I do know one thing. I've never seen a House or Senate member run for the legislature without running on education. So then I have to ask myself, do I come here and think to justify my existence, to justify my conversations? I have to bring a bunch of education bills. Just for full disclosure here, I actually bring very few education bills. So I'm going to leave it there. Todd Miller is going to come up and join me. I've worked with Todd. He's had different roles over the years in education. He's one of my go-to guys, one of my many. And Todd's going to come up right now and share some thoughts with you because this is about the building, and he is at the building level.
And unfortunately, I'm going to time you at 2 minutes.
I will be quick.
Todd,
thank you, Chair Doherty, and members of the House Education Committee. Todd Miller, Superintendent of San Diego Canyon School District. Yes, I started out my education career as special education teacher, building principal, district administrator. I've worn lots of hats and enjoyed them all and love serving the kids. Yet over those years, I've seen so much change, ranging from standards, curriculum, program, testing, cut scores, graduation rates. It's forced us into a constant state of mandate change. Our teachers are committed to student success. Yet each time something new comes down from the state, they all ask the same question: how long will this be around? It's asked because history tells us that in the next legislative cycle, it will be gone and replaced with something new. And as quickly as they come, they go, they're replaced, the cycle just continues. And the unfortunate part of this reality is it leaves committed educators skeptical and weary to commit. So ballot measure 98 is a perfect current example of this. I've spoken with a lot of superintendents, administrators, teachers, fully supportive of the concept. Yet we're weary because we're prepared to have the carpet pulled from under us again. It's a situation in which, you know, to put an analogy to it, it's like running a race and not knowing where the finish line is. We have two options. We can run in one direction, fully commit, and end up going to a dead end, or you're forced to just sit there at the starting line and wait, both of which fail. What we need is a long-range plan and stability in this state. We need time to allow success. We need to give our educators, administrators, elected board members, and communities the opportunity to drive change and then sustain change. We need funding and programs that will last and offer the flexibility to meet all of our district's various needs. By doing so, I think we can convert short-term programs into long-term success, skepticism into buy-in, and ultimately dismal state data into growth. You know, I know you have a difficult job, and you hear lots of wonderful ideas, PE, CTE programs, accountability, they're all essential, but there's some four questions we need to ask ourselves when each of these come up.
And I'm going to have you summarize here.
Okay, number one is, does this offer flexibility to meet each district's needs? Number two, will it require more reporting and administrative overhead? Three, what do we need to give up in order for the new program? And four, is it sustainable long term? We need commitment and we need stability Thank you for opening this discussion.
Okay, thank you. Any questions? Okay. Representative Springer and I talked about this earlier. I've got a blood sugar issue here. Is the idea of how many unfunded mandates have we had in the past 10 years? And I think she's done a great job of going through and saying lots. And so I think it's a very timely issue to go through and talk about. And so I agree with her of going through and dealing with this. And we have two more people that are going to speak on this. And we've got two more bills that we need to work today. So very quickly.
I just wanted to say, you know, I appreciate the conversation. I really do. And that as far as what the conversation is, I think that you don't have to want change or expect change or try for change or write a bunch of bills to say you want to make sure that we give enough resources to the schools. So, you know, and that we also want to give to the schools things that they're saying they're missing and they've had to cut because of the lack of resources. So I want us to have that conversation right along with this.
I think that nails it. Thank you very much. Okay, the last two people we have are Richard Donovan and Lori Wimmer. Oh, question?
Madam Chair, I just need to make the observation that I'm a brand new member of this committee, a brand new member of the legislature. I'm sitting down here with my friend, Representative Solman. She and I both are in the same community, both very committed to education. And this is the kind of thing that has caused me to come to this committee day after day and wonder, what the heck am I doing? And I really appreciate the work that's gone into helping us see it for what it is by putting the facts on the screen. That's very helpful. So thank you very much. Mm-hmm.
Thank you for doing the research.
Thank you.
Or someone doing the research.
Well, just so I did policy and
research office.
Research office.
Thank you very much. Okay. Richard and Lori. And what time you have? 2 minutes.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Richard Adam again on behalf of OSBA. So thank you. When I read 328, I'm excited to come and talk about Sim and Cam today in front of the ODE. Oh, is that not what we're doing?
No, I just remember that. That was one of them.
I just, you know, I kind of make that tongue-in-cheek remark. I come up here, I feel like almost every meeting and say, you know, schools are kind of, we need more resources for schools, and part of that is just considering schools as one unit and considering schools as a thing that is not just tranches or silos or things that are collections of mandates. By my count today, all the bills, of the five bills that are up today in this committee, I think could one way or another, except for this one, be considered a mandate. I know that the tools the legislative bodies have are to pass laws, and laws mandate things, but OSBA would just really like to talk about schools as a whole and how to make schools better, and we think this discussion and a two-year pause is certainly kind of the right discussion to have. So with that,
I remember minimum competencies. Remember that? No, that's gone. Okay.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, committee members. For your record, Lori Wimmer representing OEA and its 44,000 members here to appreciate House Bill 3208 and to thank you for your time on this. I feel like especially the slides made me have the last 21 years of my professional life flash before my eyes. And it was wonderful to see someone finally say, whoa, time out. What are we doing and why are we doing it in two-year increments? And, you know, how does the whole fit together? And we really appreciate both the why and the what of this bill. That's why we brought, as you may remember, House Bill 2587 to kind of try to unwind some of the damage done in more recent years. We have another bill on the Senate side that addresses specifically one of the points made in this bill, Senate Bill 746, which addresses the governance piece that was mentioned in the whereas clauses. We really believe that it is time for some kind of long-term thinking and more cohesive rationale as we think about what's best for the students in our schools. So thank you for your time.
Okay. Thank you very much. Any questions? Okay. Thank you much. Those are the last people we have signed up. And so with that, I will close the public hearing on House Bill 3208. And I will open up a work session on House Bill 2261. And if you want to give us a little summary on this or a little reminder of this.
Yeah, Chair Doherty, members of the committee, House Bill 2261 expands the allowed responsibilities of the Youth Development Council to include coordination of statewide services to youth identifying as lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer, questioning. The bill came to us with no subsequent referrals, but the Legislative Fiscal Office recommended a referral to Ways and Means. And there is a fiscal statement which has been issued. It's indeterminate, and that's available online. And there is a revenue statement which has been issued, and that is no revenue impact.
And do we have the people here if they have any questions? Because what it was is there was a request for an additional staff person. And so the fiscal office looked at this, and they weren't quite sure about whether there was enough information given and so on and so forth. And so the recommendation was to have this go to Ways and Means, and so they can go through and talk about what the staff person would be. And so that's why we're recommending this, and the Speaker's office agreed. So we're just here. We're here as a resource.
Okay.
All right.
Representative Fernandez?
Chair Doherty?
Could I ask a question?
Oh,
question.
Yes.
Thank you. While they're up there to testify. So, in looking at House Bill 2261 on page 2, on line 8, mm-hmm. and, well, most of those lines there, 5 through 9, the program ensure implementation of best practices, evidence-based, culturally gender, and age-appropriate address individual risk factors. So, the question then, Iris, is under G, why are we adding the new language? Because my question is, does the C, address individual risk factors, not address that?
Chair Doherty, Vice Chair Wilson, members of the committee, my name is Iris Bell, and I'm the Director of the Youth Development Council. I hear what you're saying there, and I understand. What has happened is that last summer, when we did a report to one of the subcommittees looking at bullying, violence, and suicide rates, we were not expecting to see the specific numbers and the high numbers that we saw with respect to the LGBTQ population. And as a result of that, we felt that we really did need to pull those out and say, wait a minute here, when we take a look at suicide, bullying, when we take a look at what happens as a result of the bullying and the violence, the dropout rates, the homeless rates, what started to sort of manifest itself was a scenario around this particular youth population that said this is not simply just looking at high risk factors. This is very specific to a population that we have not taken a look at statewide to address some of those needs and supports. And so that's why we felt very specifically this needed to be called out. We needed some statewide coordination. We needed to look at what the agencies and state government are doing about this, because the numbers were just exponentially high and off the charts.
Thank you. Okay. Any other questions? So it was the idea of coming up with stuff to help the kids.
All right, Chair Doherty, I move HB 2261 to the floor with the due pass recommendation that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Okay, Representative Hernandez moves House Bill 2261 to the floor with the due pass recommendation that it be referred to the Committee on Joint Ways and Means. Is there any further discussion on this? Okay, seeing none. Matt, could you call the roll, please?
Representative Evans.
Yes.
Representative McLean.
Aye.
Representative Parrish.
Excused.
Representative Solman.
Aye.
Representative Springer.
Aye.
Representative Bile.
Aye.
Vice Chair Hernandez.
Aye.
Vice Chair Wilson.
Aye.
Chair Doherty.
Aye. Okay, the motion passes, and the bill is sent to the Committee on Joint Ways and Means. Okay, with that, I close the work session on House Bill 2261 and open up a work session on House Bill 2997. And that was Representative Smith's bill.
Yeah, Chair Doherty, members of the committee, as a reminder, this bill was heard April 3rd. It requires that anyone having control of children between the ages of 6 and 18 years who are found in violation of not sending children to school shall have half of the collected fines sent to the school district or education service district, and other half sent to either the state of Oregon, county, or city that established the court. There is no revenue impact on this bill, and it has a minimal fiscal impact.
Representative Springer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a point of clarification. I think I heard April 3rd, first
yeah.
heard. This was probably March 3rd.
Yeah, it was March 29th. Apologies.
29th, yes.
Yeah.
And, I don't care, but the record does. So my question is, in the testimony, I'm not remembering a number, how many convictions are there of this? Is this an academic exercise?
I would answer yes. There were very few. In fact, I don't think that Representative Smith knew. There were very few.
Mm-hmm.
But it was the idea that why does all of it go to the sheriff's office when some of it should go back to the school districts to go through and work with this and deal with this and so on. So the answer to your question, yes.
Okay.
Yes. But if they do, at least the schools will get some money back to be able to work with the children and get them into school.
$60.
Chair Doherty, I move HB 2997 to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Okay, Representative Hernandez moves House Bill 2997 to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Any further discussion? Okay, seeing none, if you could, if the clerk could read the roll, Matt, if you read the roll, please.
Representative Evans.
Yes.
Aye.
Representative Parrish.
Excuse.
Representative Solman.
Aye.
Representative Springer.
Aye.
Representative Vile.
Aye.
Vice Chair Hernandez.
Aye.
Vice Chair Wilson.
Aye.
Chair Doherty.
Aye. Okay, with that, the motion passes, and we will assign a carrier. I'm going to assign Representative.
Okay.
With that, we close the work session on House Bill 2297, and 2997. And we're going to carry over. Are we going to carry over anything, or are we done?
Everything got seen.
Are we going to work the two bills that we heard today? Representative Wilson, Representative Hernandez. And that was the ones on...
Occupational therapy.
Occupational therapy and...
Service boundaries. Charter schools.
Charter school service boundaries.
Yeah. Work them today?
Might as well.
Okay, with that, I open up a work session on House Bill 3313, which is the... Which one's that one?
Chair Doherty, members of the committee, House Bill 3313 allows public charter schools to give priority admission to students who reside within the service boundaries of a non-chartered public school, closed not more than 2 years before the charter school began to operate.
Okay.
There is no revenue impact on this bill, and there's a minimal fiscal impact, which are available online, and the bill currently has no subsequent referrals.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. Senator Hernandez.
Chair Doherty, I move HB 3313 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay, Representative Hernandez moves House Bill 3313 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any further discussion? Okay, seeing none, Matt, could you read the roll, please?
Representative Evans.
Yes.
Representative
McClain. Aye.
Representative Parrish.
Excuse.
Representative Solman.
Aye.
Representative Springer.
Aye.
Representative Vile.
Aye.
Vice Chair Hernandez.
Nay.
Vice Chair Wilson.
Aye.
Chair Doherty.
Aye. Okay, with that, the motion passes, and I will sign this to Representative Barnhart. And so we close the work session on House Bill 3313 and open up a work session on House Bill
3263. Chair Doherty, members of the committee, House Bill 30.
Madam Chair, I request that we not work that today until I've had a chance to talk to the chair and others on the committee, because I felt that there was some comments that were made from this dais that really confused me.
Okay.
And I think may have confused a few other people. So I'd really like us not to work that today.
It sounds good. So with that, we will carry over the work session on House Bill 3263. I appreciate you bringing that up.
Until Wednesday.
So carry that over.
I know, but we heard it.
Okay, I think that is it. So with that, we adjourn. Thanks much, you guys.
All right.
All right, that's a lot.
Thanks much, you guys.
All right.
All right, that's